Great journalism takes a long time to write and to read. Lucky for you, you can get ProPublica articles read aloud to you by the best audiobook narrators in the business with the Autumn iPhone app. There's also work from The Atlantic, Wired, The New York Review of Books, and dozens of other publications. And the Breakthrough listeners get a 40% discount when you go to autumn.com/ProPublica Podcast. That's AUDM.com/ProPublica Podcast. The Breakthrough is sponsored by Scribd. Stay in the know and feed your curiosity with access to everything worth reading, including ProPublica articles. ProPublica listeners can read free for 60 days. Just visit scribd.com/ProPublica Podcast. That's scribd.com/ProPublica Podcast. Now, here's the Breakthrough.
He took out his phone and he had a video on his phone, and he said, you know, he showed it to us, and it was only, I think, 35 seconds. And Lauren is in her bed, her hospital bed. She has Haley, the baby, who's just been, you know, just barely an hour old. And from the moment he, you know, took the video right after birth to the time that she died was 20 hours.
That's ProPublica reporter Nina Martin, and this is The Breakthrough, the podcast from ProPublica where investigative journalists reveal how they nailed their biggest stories. I'm Joaquin Sapien. Nina reports on sex and gender for ProPublica, and her story, The Last Person You'd Expect to Die in Childbirth, details why the U.S. has the worst maternal death rate in the developed world, and how U.S. hospitals have failed to implement basic procedures that could save lives. It's a topic Nina's been thinking about for a while. She used to write for parenting and baby magazines, and that work taught her something.
Which is that nobody cares about anything more than they care about their babies.
Nina experienced this firsthand when her sister, Camille, was pregnant. One day, Nina's mom calls her.
And said, you know, she's really not okay. There's something the matter with her. We don't know what's the matter. She's really lethargic. She's in a lot of pain.
Nina rushes from San Francisco, where she was living, to Texas, where her sister's in the hospital.
And when she was in the hospital, things just sort of cascaded in this way that was kind of very frantic and very disorienting and also sort of slow motion at the same time. There was really something the matter with her. Nobody seemed to either know what was the matter or wanted to know what was the matter, wanted to tell us what was the matter. And it was really, she came pretty close, I think, in retrospect to dying. And certainly it was this amazing, horrible, traumatic experience for our family. And it was really eye-opening to me. And then what happened that was equally eye-opening in retrospect is that it just kind of all went away. Baby was fine. Camille got over it. It was a trauma for her. It was this sort of, you know, very private sort of thing that had happened to her. But it kind of faded from our family history. And so it was just something that I've thought about a lot in the last year as I've been thinking about this project.
It was never entirely clear what Camille had. She had a cyst on her liver. She had an infection. Whatever it was, it nearly killed her. And even though her sister's near death faded from their family's history, Nina couldn't let it go. Childbirth is a celebrated time, but as Nina comes to find out, it's also a time in which the medical system all too often fails women. And that's what Nina wants to figure out. How many women die or nearly die in childbirth and why?
So that was my mandate last year. And I started sort of trying to wrap my arms around the big questions around maternal mortality. And also, and importantly, not just mortality, but what experts call severe morbidity. So those are the women who don't die, but who very nearly die. And that's where the huge numbers are in the U.S. And for every woman who dies, there's 100 women who nearly die.
In 2010, Amnesty International issued an alarming report. It showed that as cesarean section rates and the price of medical care increased, so too did the U.S. maternal mortality rate. Nina talks this report over with her editor, and they decide it'll be the focus of a new project at ProPublica.
And there seemed to be a realization somewhere along the way that there's a lot of attention on the health of babies immediately after their birth, but not as much attention on the health of mothers. Do you recall when exactly that fact dawned on you and what you made of it?
You know, we talked to very eminent experts at the CDC, you know, various professional organizations, and almost casually people would sort of say, well, you know, we care more about the baby than we do about the mom. And it was something that just really struck me because, again, I think that, you know, one of the issues that people always assume when you're talking about poor maternal care is people talk a lot about racial disparities and disparities in care between affluent women and poor women. And those are incredibly important, incredibly profound, totally real. And we're, you know, we're writing about those things. But the disparities that I think that that people hadn't really focused on were these disparities between how we think about the mother and how we care about the mother and how we really, in many ways, have come to prioritize the baby and almost forget about the mom in certain contexts.
The Centers for Disease Control estimates that for every 100,000 births in the U.S., more than 24 women will die. So Nina decides to find all the cases she can in 2015 and 2016. She searches LexisNexis, she Googles for news reports, but she only finds the names of a few women. And she knows this can't be right because hundreds of women in the U.S. die during childbirth every year.
And what I realized was that the place where deaths were most likely to be noticed and memorialized in the U.S. 2016-2017 is on GoFundMe.
GoFundMe is a crowdfunding site where people raise money for all kinds of things, sometimes medical care and funerals.
I just came up with as many different search terms as I could and just did it over and over and over and over and over again.
When Nina finds a page on GoFundMe that seems related to the death of a mother, she cross-references it. She checks obituaries and Facebook posts from friends and family members. And if she can confirm that a woman died in childbirth, she enters her name into the database she's building.
It was like digging for, you know, digging. Deeply through social media for clues about people who had died and then trying to track them down. And after doing that, ultimately we identified about 170 women who had died in 2016. And those are not, you know, the number of women we think who actually die in a year is probably in the U.S. is closer to 700 to 900.
Once she has this list of women, Nina and her reporting partner at NPR, Renee Montaigne, try to get in touch with the family members of the women who died in 2016. They write messages on Facebook. They call their husbands, friends, mothers.
And that was actually a big hurdle. It was too recent. In many cases, people did not respond to us at all. In a couple of cases, we did get through to people, and they said basically, they listened politely, and we did our spiel, and then they said they would think about it, and they would ask around, and they would get back to us if the family agreed, and then we never heard back from them.
So did this have you worried that you weren't going to be able to do the story at all? I mean, you know, you've got, like, this is a real moment here. You've got this great database that nobody has ever assembled before. It's got all these amazing anecdotes. You think, like, this is the framework for a story that's never been done that could resonate with a lot of people. And you go out and you start trying to contact folks and no one wants to talk. I mean, what were you thinking going home at night at the end of the day, getting the phone, you know, getting people to say that they didn't want to talk to you? How did that feel for you personally? Were you worried?
Yes, worried. And just, you know, you sort of doubt yourself as a reporter and as a human being in some ways. Like, I'm making people so upset and you know, and it's not working as a reporter. And how do we do this?
So Nina, Renee, and staff at both ProPublica and NPR decide to look for women online. They create a survey. It's got questions on it for women who have had a complicated pregnancy. They tweet it out and post it on Facebook. It's shoe leather reporting for the digital age. In the first week, they received thousands of responses. At the same time, Nina calls the Preeclampsia Foundation and says she's looking to talk to family members who have lost someone during childbirth.
And they sent me a couple of different names eventually, but the first name that they'd sent us was Larry Bloomstein, a doctor in New Jersey whose wife had died in 2011.
Her name was Lauren Bloomstein. She was a neonatal nurse at a hospital in New Jersey, the same hospital where she delivered her daughter and where she ultimately died. Nina and Renee approached Larry gently.
He was very gracious. He was very open in ways that we had really not imagined that he would be.
Larry's an orthopedic trauma surgeon. Nina and Renee's first interview with him lasted 4 hours.
We were just stunned to hear his story, that he had witnessed the whole thing. Lauren had had she'd had a really healthy pregnancy. She was a nurse. She was a very healthy person. She was 33. She was quite young. She knew a lot about babies. She knew a lot about healthcare, obviously. She went in to deliver her baby by induction. She was, you know, on her due date and, you know, had everything had gone well. She'd had a little bit of pain during her labor that was unexpected and a high up in her back. But, you know, the nurses hadn't thought anything of it. They'd just given her a little bit of bumped up her epidural and she was fine. And then she delivered and then, you know, everything seemed okay. And they were taking pictures and he was taking a video and family members were calling and she was texting her friends and, you know, everything seemed fine. And then he goes up to the nursery with the baby to deliver her to the nursery for tests and so forth and comes back down. And Lauren's not feeling well. And she starts complaining about terrible pain in her, they call it the epigastric area. So it's high up in her abdomen, right under her sternum. And you know, pain that is soon sort of escalates to 10 out of 10. She's vomiting and nobody seems to, you know, and her blood pressure is really spiking.
Obviously, this worries Larry. High blood pressure and abdominal pain are symptoms of a pregnancy complication called preeclampsia, which is blood poisoning from bacterial toxins. He calls a colleague, a doctor who works in the trauma unit at a nearby hospital and also happens to be a new mother. Larry starts to explain Lauren's symptoms, and before he can finish, his colleague interrupts. It's a disease called HELLP, H-E-L-L-P, she says, a very serious type of preeclampsia. His colleague told him, "Your wife's in a lot of danger." But when Larry told this to Lauren's doctors and nurses, they insisted that none of Lauren's tests showed any indication of preeclampsia. Larry begged the doctor to do something, to call a specialist. But Lauren's OBGYN insisted she had reflux and prescribed her an antacid and an opioid painkiller. As Larry's describing this to Nina and Renee,
he took out his phone and he had a video on his phone and he said, you know, he showed it to us and it was only, I think, 35 seconds.
Here's a question too. 3/4 of the bag, so think about your options.
Okay.
Remember, you don't have to do anything.
Lauren is in her bed, her hospital bed. She has Haley, the baby, who's just been, you know, just barely an hour old. And Haley's all bundled up and Lauren's just given birth and she looks incredibly healthy and happy and just really ecstatic and her eyes are brimming and she's sort of stroking the baby and the baby's looking at the mom and then it kind of goes down from there. So from the moment he, you know, took the video right after birth, to the time that she died was 20 hours. You know, we saw that and we couldn't help but, you know, have tears and choke up and just kind of feel this shudder of sadness and recognition that this is what he saw and what, you know, and also just the pain of seeing him watch it again and think about what had happened and talk about it. And, you know, he watched it a couple of times and it was a really shattering moment to be there. And, you know, I guess I'm a little bit old-fashioned in a lot of ways. I've sort of think, you know, there are things that people keep private, and this video would be maybe one of them, right? He shared the photos, but there's something intensely, intensely private about that video, and it wouldn't surprise me at all if he didn't want to keep it private. We asked him if he'd share it with us, and he did, and we asked several other times, "Are you sure you want to share this with us?" And he said yes. And I think that video was sort of an aha moment, another one, because it sort of I think that you don't quite, you know, there's this thing where you don't quite believe a story that could be quite as incredible as the one he was telling. She must have come in sicker than he said. She must have been, you know, in bad shape. Like, you can't quite believe it. And then you see the video and you see it with your own eyes and you think, oh no, she really was okay in that video.
After the interview, Larry sends Nina Lauren's medical records and photos of Lauren and photos of Lauren and Larry together. He also sends her a state investigation into the hospital after Lauren's death. Nina had read parts of the investigation before, but the name of the woman who died had been withheld. So Nina had logged the unnamed woman as number 3 in her spreadsheet. Now she realizes that that unnamed woman was Lauren. When Nina reaches out to the hospital, they tell her they can't talk to her because of patient confidentiality. Nina tries to talk to Lauren's doctor. He too refuses. Larry, however, filed a lawsuit, and as part of it, the doctor had to give sworn testimony. So there was a deposition out there that had the doctor's side of the story.
And so we began asking Larry and his lawyers for depositions, and they said they couldn't turn them over to us.
So Nina gets creative. She calls the court reporters to see if they would give her the deposition. They wouldn't. She sends a letter to Larry's lawyer saying the deposition is in the public's interest. Larry's lawyer shows it to the judge, and the judge agrees. The deposition is in the public interest and can be released. Still, the lawyer won't budge. With her deadline approaching, Nina calls Larry with a fact-checking question, and he says that the information she was asking about is in the deposition.
And so maybe you'll just read that part of the deposition and make sure that you know, to fact check it, basically. And then Larry ended up just sending us the deposition.
With the deposition in hand, Nina can tell the doctor's side of the story. The doctor documented her vital signs as her condition worsened, but he repeatedly missed the warning signs of HELLP syndrome. The deposition also showed that in spite of it all, the hospital stood behind the doctor's decisions. As soon as the story is published, Nina starts getting emails from men and women, husbands, sisters, mothers, co-workers, and friends who have lost or nearly lost the woman they love in childbirth. Several doctors email to say they've put the story in their waiting rooms.
It's been pretty astonishing to me. I was kind of kicking and screaming the whole way as my story was getting longer and longer. I was saying, nobody's going to read an 8,500 or 9,000 word, however many words it ended up being, story. You know, and so I really didn't expect anybody to read to the end of it. I thought they would watch Lauren's video, and I thought the people who, you know, were mentioned in the story would read it, but I didn't think it would get this kind of, but I think it people have read it, and we have gotten a lot of response from women sharing their own stories, a lot of preeclampsia HELLP stories, and a lot of other near-death experiences. We've heard from some families whose loved ones have died, including, most heartbreakingly, a man who emailed us a week after the story published from New Jersey. It turns out he lives 10 minutes away from Larry. Same age, his wife was 35, and she just died of HELLP syndrome, not at the same hospital, but at a nearby hospital. And he found us because he had read our story, but apparently his doctors hadn't. And then we heard from a woman on Twitter via Reddit who had just given birth and had read the story and realized that the symptoms, she had gone home and she was feeling bad and realized that her symptoms sounded an awful lot like Lauren Bloomstein's symptoms. And so she went back to the hospital, and it turned out she did indeed have severe preeclampsia that she thinks that she might not have done anything about if she hadn't read the story.
Wow, that's amazing. So, I mean, what do you want listeners to take away from your reporting?
We really want people to start talking about the maternal, to understand what goes on in the maternal period is incredibly important for women, for families, for children, for everybody. Good care is essential, and that women deserve it, and that we all deserve it, and that it's really important to think about this as a public good as opposed to as a private issue.
This story is the first in a continuing series on maternal health. Next, Nina will focus on racial disparities. Be sure to keep track of Nina's work on ProPublica.org. Next week on The Breakthrough.
People were getting screwed, and they came to us for help. And I think people don't understand that about investigative reporting. They think that we're out there beating our breasts, and we're just, you know, getting a big adrenaline rush at chasing bad guys. That's not how this starts. You know, it really starts with real people in the real world feeling that they've been taken.
Anne Galloway, founder of the online news site BT Digger, breaks down what it was like to uncover a statewide scandal involving foreign money, a ski resort, and promises that were too good to be true. That's next week. You've been listening to The Breakthrough, the podcast from ProPublica where investigative journalists reveal how they nailed their biggest stories. Our theme music was composed by Miralyn Tony. Our producer is Ashley Cleek. Ibi Caputo is our editor. Sarah Brooke Curtis is our sound engineer. Celeste Lecompte is our executive producer. And I'm Joaquin Sapien. Thanks for listening.
This episode of The Breakthrough was brought to you by Scribd. Join Scribd and get monthly access to the best books, audiobooks, and magazines all in one app. ProPublica podcast listeners can read free for 60 days. Just visit scribd.com/ProPublica podcast. That's scribd.com/ProPublica podcast.